Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Ohio House yesterday put forward a dramatic proposed change in how the state administers its publicly funded private school voucher program called EdChoice. The proposed change comes as the number of public schools considered failing and therefore EdChoice eligible under the current laws is set to more than double on Saturday. House Speaker Larry Householder defended the proposed change or defended the decision by the House not to approve the Senate bill that's moving through to stem the increase. He said that instead the program should become entirely income-based in a statement put out yesterday. Before that, he was defending their decision not to approve the Senate version.
Something that's better than where the Senate's at. We appreciate the work that the Senate's done. And now it's our time to come together between the Senate and the House and resolve the issue.
Karen Kassler is a bureau chief for Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. She's been covering the issue. Karen, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
You know,
How are you?
I think I kind of demolished that introduction because so much has happened in the last 12 hours.
Absolutely.
When we planned this program, it was all one thing and everything changed overnight. So I'm just, even though I wrote it all down, it doesn't make sense anymore. What's going to happen on Saturday, all things being equal?
Well, I mean, the soundbite that you just played from Speaker Householder, that was the second time he talked to reporters yesterday. And you can hear he really didn't say a whole lot. And we had no idea what was coming in his statement that he put out at 9 o'clock, which you just talked about, the whole basically overhauling the entire EdChoice voucher system and creating an income-based voucher system entirely, getting rid of that performance-based system and making it based on income alone. So what we have here is a situation where EdChoice application, that process opens on Saturday. And you have families who are looking at using those EdChoice vouchers. Because they're considered to be in failing schools, those families can apply for EdChoice vouchers, use those vouchers to go to private school. Those vouchers are $4,650 for kids through kindergarten to eighth grade. And then high school kids, it's $6,000. EdChoice vouchers are paid for out of public school district money.
Where they're failing.
Exactly. Now, what's interesting here is because the criteria has changed to determine whether a school is failing or not, we've had a dramatic increase in the number of school buildings where students can qualify for EdChoice vouchers.
What changed about the criteria?
Well, this was something that happened back in 2013.
Okay.
The criteria was changed, but then there were also a lot of changes going on with testing and report cards. You remember, we changed the report cards in 2012 to get rid of that whole continuous improvement and all those kind of vague labels and went to an A through F grading system. The school buildings were held harmless for several years while these things were all being phased in, while the new tests were being phased in, while the new grade cards were being phased in.
Okay.
So now it's all hitting that we've come from 200 and some schools that were EdChoice eligible, considered failing, last school year, 517 schools failing as of this year, 1,227 schools failing as of next year if no changes are made. Because the criteria is now all hitting these school districts, and it's really dramatically increasing the number that are considered failing.
Are these unintended consequences?
I think that that's pretty well put.
Okay.
I think when the criteria was put into place years ago, I don't think anybody saw that it would potentially be 70% of Ohio school districts would have a building that would be considered failing. We're talking about, in some cases, some of the best school districts in the state that have buildings that under these rules would be considered failing. And I don't think that was the intention of the people who put this criteria forward, but that's the result of what's happened here. Now, Speaker Householder and others will say one of the big things that's a problem here is the K-3 literacy score. There are six criteria. Graduation rate is one, performance index is another, but the K-3 literacy score is something that has stuck out to some lawmakers as being a problem because that's an area that school buildings can really fall behind in. And that's all it takes is it takes one bad grade over a couple of years for a building to be considered failing. And so the message that lawmakers say this is sending to everybody is 70% of Ohio school districts have a building that's considered failing. They say that message is not true, and it really could potentially hurt Ohio in terms of academic economic development, getting people to come here, getting people to move here for jobs and that sort of thing. If you hear that Ohio has 70% of its school districts that have failing buildings, that just sounds really terrible. So they want to make a change, not just because you have so many kids who could potentially apply for EdChoice vouchers, but because there's this real concern about the message that that's sending.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Kieran Kassler, Bureau Chief for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau, is talking with us about the current situation of the EdChoice program. That is the Ohio's publicly funded private school voucher program. Currently, it is designed to respond when there are failing buildings for one reason or another. We were just talking about the six criteria and giving people, low-income people, which is another issue, option or the ability to use these school vouchers.
There are actually, I believe, five.
Five criteria.
Five programs. There's different programs. There's different voucher programs that the state offers. There's an autism scholarship. There's the EdChoice scholarship. There's the Cleveland voucher program, which is totally separate.
Okay.
And then there's also the income-based. EdChoice is not based on income. EdChoice is based on whether your school is failing or not. Your school building, not your school district, but your school building. So if you are in a particular school district where there's one building that's considered failing and your kid happens to go to it, you could potentially qualify for an EdChoice voucher, no matter how much money you make. That's the income-based vouchers are different. They are specifically targeted toward people who are low income, who want to be able to move their kids to a private school. And most of these private schools, it should be said, are religious affiliated.
Now, what came out at 9 o'clock last night is the Ohio House Speaker Larry Householder announced in a written statement. No one's really talked to him yet, from what I understand, that he wants to make the EdChoice program income-based.
Right.
So in keeping all the other ones, but make this one just...
Well, no.
That's a question.
No,
we
that's
don't know.
That's what... It was interesting because... So the Senate had passed a measure that would change the number of schools that would be considered failing from 1,227, like I said earlier, to 420. They did that on Tuesday night. And so they passed that over to the House. Then they had attached it to a bill that already existed because there's not enough time with the application process opening on Saturday for, pardon me, for a bill to be introduced, have hearings, do all that. So they had to attach it to a bill that already existed. So they passed that bill. The Senate did. They took it over to the House. The House rejected it because they
unanimously.
Yes, because they wanted to send it to conference committee where these things could potentially be worked out. So all day long, we were waiting to find out what conference committee was going to do with that. And Speaker Householder, in the two times I talked to him yesterday, seemed very confident. We're going to work this out. It's no problem. I said, are we going to go into Friday? He said, no, we're going to work this out. It's fine. And we're going to have potentially some bold ideas come out here.
Yeah, bold.
And this was a pretty bold idea, I have to admit, because a lot of the conversation has been about, well, let's lower the number of schools that will qualify for EdChoice and give ourselves some time as lawmakers to come up with a new way to determine if schools are failing. Let's change the report cards. Let's change the criteria. We'll do something in that time frame, but we need to give ourselves some time to do that. But we need to let the EdChoice families know that this is the list of buildings that will qualify, and we need to do that before Saturday when the application process opens.
Yeah.
Then Larry Householder last night comes out with a statement saying he wants to eliminate the EdChoice program going forward. So people who have EdChoice vouchers now would still be able to keep them. But going forward, make that an income-based only voucher system. So taking away that whole failing school system qualification and making it all income-based, which is really interesting, and it sets up a very interesting conflict because it looks like Householder's idea is going to be attached to a Senate bill sponsored by Republican Senator Matt Huffman of Lima. He has wanted income-based vouchers for a long time, and he's actually proposed bills that would they would merge the whole system into an income-based voucher system. But he wants vouchers to go up to 400% of the federal poverty level, which is $105,000 a year for a family of four. That means a lot of people in the state would qualify for income-based vouchers. Larry Householder wants it a lot lower than that. He wants it at 200% of the federal poverty level. So that, I think, is the situation that we're we're facing now is if they do go into this income-based voucher system, where is going to be the income threshold set?
Is there enough? What's your sense about the what level of support there is for this dramatic proposed change?
I mean, I think there's a lot of concern about that number, that 1,227 buildings that would qualify for EdChoice. I think there's a lot of concern among lawmakers about that.
That they're trying to fix right now.
And I think that the pressure is on to fix that before Saturday. And I think a lot of lawmakers are really, really concerned about that. To go to the income-based system, I think there's potentially an awful lot of support. Like I said, Matt Huffman has wanted this for a long time, but he wants it at a higher level. Mm-hmm. But obviously, once you change the system, you could raise the income threshold at some point if you wanted to. But I think this is the kind of idea that I think shakes everything up, especially at a time when you're trying to work through all this and get it done quickly. I think it seems like it could be doable.
Another issue is that with the EdChoice program as it currently stands, when a child goes from the public school to a private school as part of the program, the district from which they the public school district pays the freight.
Right.
And it's more money than in some cases than this district actually gets from the state for that child. This proposal by Larry Householder to go to income-based would be state-funded.
That's a really important point here. And that's another reason why I think that this is something that could potentially get support, especially from Democrats. Because, yeah, EdChoice takes the money directly from the school district. And so if you've got a kid who's going to high school and you're at your school district having to pay $6,000 voucher for that kid, what if you only get $1,000 from the state?
Right.
You're paying more for that voucher than you're even getting from the state. If you go into an income-based voucher system.
Particularly if you're one of the higher wealth districts that are being nailed in all of this.
Exactly. So, yeah, if you're a higher wealth district, you are getting less from the state than a lower wealth district is. So I think that's very important that if you get rid of EdChoice going forward, then eventually this will not be on the school district's budgets. It'll be on the state budget because the state will pay for income-based vouchers. But that raises another question. If the state is paying for income-based vouchers, that's money, and it's potentially, you know, we're talking billions of dollars here eventually, potentially, that would not go to other programs, that would not go to schools, that would not go to something else.
It has to come from someone's hide.
Exactly.
And just if you can, and we can talk about this in more depth going forward, but how did it get to this situation where there's so many different voucher programs in Ohio?
Well, I mean, we started out with the Cleveland Voucher Program.
And I thought that everything sort of sprung from that,
yes.
But that's still intact as it was originally devised.
Yes. I mean, that went to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Since 1995, yeah.
Yeah, that was in 2002, went to the U.S. Supreme Court, was upheld. And then from there, more voucher programs were built. Because school choice and the whole school choice movement has been trying to come up with ways to allow parents who their kids are in schools that are considered failing to allow those parents to move those kids to other schools. Of course, that's a problem for school districts who say, if you take money away from us, we don't have the opportunity to get better. And so we end up with these several different voucher programs that the state is operating. I mean, you know, a special needs voucher for a lot of people seems different than some of these others, especially when most of the schools that qualify. I mean, just for fun today, I looked up the EdChoice.
You're a sick person.
I know. I have a problem. the schools that qualify for EdChoice vouchers, the private schools you can send, just in Franklin County, 57 schools in Franklin County, and the overwhelming number, I think it's like 49 of them, are religious schools. They're Christian schools, they're Catholic schools, they're Jewish schools, they're religious-based schools. And so, you know, for some people, that's an issue because, you know, should the state be paying for you because you want to send your child to a faith-based school, should the taxpayers subsidize that?
It's
That's
a fundamental question. It always has been. I thought the Supreme Court resolved that,
well,
though.
There's a Supreme Court case now that kind of looks at that again.
Okay.
And says that, you know, should this be allowed or even should it be required? If you're going to have a voucher program, should religious-based schools be should you include religious-based schools if you're going to do a voucher program? If you just do secular schools, is that fair to the religious schools? So it's potentially really complicated.
And then just to clarify for everybody, this has nothing to do with charter schools.
No, this is a totally different, totally
separate
thing.
This is all different. We're talking about private schools.
Right. And charter schools are different. Charter schools are related in the whole school choice arena, but that's not what we're talking about here. Voucher schools are different. They're set up to accept vouchers, and it's a different set of qualifications.
And not all private schools accept vouchers.
That's right. Not all. Yeah, like I said, there's 57 of them in Franklin County. There are a lot more than 57 private schools in Franklin County.
All right, we're going to continue our conversation about proposed massive changes or complete makeovers of the school, the Ed Choice program in Ohio. My guest is Karen Kassler. She's bureau chief for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. And coming up, we're going to hear from a representative of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, which has an interest and supports private school education in the state of Ohio. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The Ohio House yesterday, I should say last night, the Speaker of the House put forward a dramatic proposed change in how the state administers its publicly funded private school voucher program. It's called Ed Choice. The proposed change comes as the number of public schools considered failing and therefore Ed Choice eligible under the current set of rules is set to more than double on Saturday. We're talking about school vouchers and the pros and the cons of expanding the program on the basis of income, which is what Speaker Householder is saying he wants. Still with us is Karen Kassler. She's bureau chief of the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Joining us is Aaron Churchill. He's the Ohio Research Director for the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. Welcome to the show, Aaron.
Thanks for having me on, Ann.
And also Scott DeMauro. He is president of the Ohio Education Association. Welcome.
Good to be here.
Yeah, and Karen, you wanted to correct something.
I wanted to correct something because I said this wrong. Okay. Charter schools are public schools. When I said that the whole idea of private schools,
yeah,
charter schools, they operate more, it seems like private schools, but they are public schools. So I feel like I have to put that out
by
there.
By definition. Yeah. And there, if you want to go to a charter school, the vouchers don't work there. It's a different
yes.
funding stream, blah, yep. blah, blah. Okay,
yep.
All right. So, Aaron Churchill, let's turn to you first. As a rule, the Thomas B. Fordham Institute tends to support school vouchers. It supports the expansion of them. Tell us what you think about this plan, though, to make it income-based across the board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're correct. The Thomas B. Fordham Institute, we're a nonprofit policy think tank here based in Columbus, and we do support school choice. You know, fundamentally, we believe that, you know, the responsibility of educating a child and upbringing them as a parent, and parents should have a range of quality school options for their kids, whether it's a you know, private school, whether it's a public charter school or whether it's their traditional school district. We'd love to see, you know, parents have a lot of options for their kids. So that's right. In terms of your question about the eligibility requirements for Ed Choice, and that's mm-hmm. really what's up for debate in the State House.
At the moment.
Yeah.
I haven't checked the news
and,
yet.
We completely support, you know, the income-based eligibility and sort of shift in focus in that direction. It does sort of get closer to the underlying logic behind the Ed Choice Scholarship, which is to provide a need-based scholarship for parents who need the extra funding support to help send their kid to a private school. Which obviously charge tuition, and that is a barrier for a lot of families, especially low-income families who can't access that type of choice, and even working-class families, you know, who don't have the disposable income to send their child to a private school. So we do support the income-based eligibility. We can talk more about the so-called family schools model as well. But, you know, that's where we are.
And Scott DeMauro, obviously everything's all mixed up right now. We have this pending, this deadline coming up on Saturday that's going to affect a lot of school districts if they don't address it. Tell us where the Ohio Education Association, which of course represents teachers across the state of Ohio, what your philosophy is about this issue.
Correct. We represent
public school teachers, I should say.
Represent educators and other education support professionals in all 88 counties. We've got 122,000 members across the state. And, you know, we have always believed that every student, no matter where they live, deserves the resources necessary to have a high quality education so that they have the time and the tools to be successful. And so we take a different approach from Fordham and others in terms of, you know, whether you should have a parallel system that essentially funds private schools when public education is all about serving the public good and public dollars should be focused in our public schools. So going all the way back to 1995, we've had real concerns with, you know, with the voucher programs in the state of Ohio. That said, we're at a place right now where there is clearly urgency to have a change. It is absolutely ridiculous that you could have 1,200 buildings in very high performing, you know, school districts around the state that could suddenly be labeled as a failure and then open the door for people to be subsidized for their choice to send their kids to private schools. So the legislature has to act. There's no doubt about that. One of the things that the speaker's proposal, I think, has illustrated in terms of shifting away from the ed choice tied to the flawed report cards that we have is that he's acknowledged in his comments that, you know, one of the underlying problems that we have, and we hear it from our members all the time, is that, you know, people are really frustrated with the emphasis on standardized testing. And it's not testing to help kids. It's testing to put labels so that you can label and blame and shame teachers and schools and districts in order to justify diverting resources away and sending them to, you know, other options. So I think the speaker's idea here, you know, is really opening up a new conversation about that whole test-based system of accountability and changing the paradigm on that.
And he's not in this, in what he, it looks like what he's proposing would not take the money from the districts in some way. It would be coming from a state
right
funding stream.
Yeah, we've believed, and in fact, we talk about the complexity of education policy. You know, there's been this ongoing discussion about
30 years.
Cup-Patterson and school funding and DeRolf.
Yeah.
And one of the things that has a lot of traction is this idea that these alternative options, including charter schools, including vouchers, ought to be paid for by the state. And unfortunately, the Ed Choice program, as well as the charter school program, is paid in a way that it is local taxpayers that are subsidizing the cost because it's a deduction model, which means that if a school district has a student who chooses to take a voucher and that voucher is worth $6,000, the state deducts $6,000 from their funding, even if the state was only giving that district $1,000
right,
in funding. So that means $5,000 is coming out of the local tax levy. And when people go to the ballot and they vote for a tax levy, nobody's ever expecting that money is going to pay for private schools or pay for charter schools that aren't part of the public school system. So, yes, one of the advantages of this approach of going to an income-only voucher system is the cost would be borne fully by the state. And, you know, that's a step in the right direction for sure.
And when Scott talks about changing the conversation, I think that's what really happens here. In our conversations with the speaker yesterday, he specifically talked about how he feels like there's an unfair playing field. There's been too much competition from these private schools, from people who want the private schools to do better, in a sense. And then Householder's always been really a strong advocate for public schools. Think about where he comes from. He
right.
comes from Licking County, where the DeRolf case originated. And so he's...
You could have all the choice in the world, but there's nothing to choose from.
Right. And so he's been an advocate for school choice, but also saying it can't come at the expense of the school districts that need state help, because he brought it up yesterday. The Constitution says that Ohio is required to pay for and create a system of schools for, you know, common schools.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's talked about that is the state's responsibility here. And he doesn't want that these private schools and the Ed Choice program that draws from public school budgets to hurt the public schools while still allowing some school choice. It's complicated.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's complicated is the word of the day. Aaron Churchill, what about the funding stream? Do you agree that it's a conversation changer?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, first of all, you know, we would support the move from direct funding from the state for the school choice programs. I would like to go back to one of the comments that Scott mentioned, which is the question about whether local tax money is actually moving when students use a voucher. And it is a common sort of misconception. In my view, the local money doesn't move because the local tax money that a district raises is based on their property values times the local tax rate, and the school enrollments don't matter in that equation. So you could imagine, you know, actually in Columbus, you know, Columbus City School District, if every student took a voucher tomorrow, you know, the local tax revenue would be exactly the same for the school district. There is an impact on the state revenue side that local districts receive, where we do have an enrollment-based system to determine state allocation. You know, when students exercise choice, there is an effect on state appropriation for that district. So it's just one of those things where it's complicated, as you said, but, the local money doesn't move when kids take a voucher or family exercises that type of choice.
Wait a minute. So slow down a second. You're saying that's even the case for high wealth districts that would potentially be affected by the existing system and what might go into effect on Saturday if they don't amend it. A high wealth district that gets $1,000 from the state per student per year, you're saying that all they give up is that $1,000 and not the additional $5,000 in the case of a high school student that they would take with them in a voucher?
Right.
Well, where
does
that funding, that extra $5,000 comes from the state coffers?
Yeah, I mean, it comes from the state. The Ed Choice scholarships are funded by the state. They always have been. The payment method that the state uses complicates it, as you're talking about. Where is the deduction from the state revenues that the district sees?
Yeah.
It's not a deduction from the local tax revenue, which is based on property taxes.
No, but don't they have to make up the deduction at the state level with local tax revenues?
They do. There is some where they have to offset some of the losses.
Yeah.
So we do have to remember that when a student leaves for school choice, and if we do believe that there's a cost of educating students, that that district should be able to reduce their costs when students leave for any school choice program.
Okay. All right. And Scott DeMauro,
I think in some ways we're getting into a semantics argument here. The result is that there is a net loss that has to come out of local revenue in order to make up for the deduction, you know, that comes out of the state funding, you know, that a district receives. Bottom line, again, is if the state is going to be having these programs, then the state ought to be paying for it, and local taxpayers shouldn't.
So, Karen Kessler, what are you expecting? Well, let's look back at the beginning. And I've asked you this already once, but I'm still curious about how this became so fragmented, all the different programs that are out there. Accepting the issue of special needs students, which is a completely different, in my mind, it's a different issue.
Well, I think the whole question was whether the state wanted to have an income-based voucher system or a performance-based voucher system.
There was no in between.
Well, and I think that's what we're talking about here, is that there is a performance-based system which looks at individual school buildings and determines whether they're failing or
but
not.
But the way they measure that is that's messing things up right now.
Sure.
Okay.
But then also the income-based, which is pretty simple in terms of you look at someone's family income and either they qualify or they don't for a voucher. So I think that's how we've got these two separate programs going on here. And that's what's really interesting about Householder's proposal is that it merges them into a single income-based only program. Though, like I said, the people who have EdChoice vouchers now will still be able to keep them. But eventually, all those kids will fall off school district budgets. So if this goes through in the next 12 years, there will be no more EdChoice performance-based vouchers, and that will be off school districts' budgets, but then the income-based vouchers will be on the state's budget. And like I said, there's some questions about the funding that goes to them that doesn't go to other places.
And I think it's important, as we talk about a performance-based voucher system, to keep in mind that this is based on a rigged system. You know, you have a report card that has lots of flaws in the measure, and fundamentally, you know, the letter grades are reflective more than anything else of the level of wealth, you know, or poverty in a district. And then you've got individual measures. And one of the things that the House pointed out in their negotiations yesterday was that you have this K-3 literacy component to the report card, which doesn't measure whether students are reading at the third grade, you know, reading level or not. It measures kind of a convoluted way that nobody else or nobody can quite explain. How do you take students that are identified for early intervention in kindergarten, first and second grade, and then what's the level of growth? And under that measure, and virtually everybody recognizes that it's a flawed measure, half the districts, half the schools in the state of Ohio get a D or an F. And so that's why the House is saying, you know, this is a flawed measure. Let's take it out of the mix. But the even larger question, though, is this narrative about so-called failing public schools. If you look at similarly situated students and how they're doing in the public school versus how they're doing in other options, even Fordham did a study a few years ago that compared similarly situated students and students who took vouchers and went to a private school and students from the same neighborhood that stayed in the public school, mm-hmm. and the students who stayed in the public school did better. So I really do welcome the fact that the speaker is saying, let's reset that whole conversation about failing public schools.
This is about choice, not about failing schools.
Yeah. And then that opens, of course, a whole other conversation about, you know, is it really constitutional? Does it make sense for the public to subsidize the religious choices of families? And then if you're talking about setting up an entitlement program for private school education, how does that play out when you're talking about food stamps, when you're talking about Medicaid, when you're talking about school lunches? I mean, it gets really complicated. Well, in all of this, one thing that I hope we have an opportunity to do is have more public discussion and public debate. Yeah. Unfortunately, there's a deadline at the end of this week, and
deadline.
The legislature has to do something, you know, to make a change.
Aaron Churchill, what about changing the conversation from failing school buildings to income? Doesn't it fundamentally, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a fundamental change in the approach. Where do you guys stand on that?
Yeah. I mean, I do think, you know, as I mentioned, you know, sort of at the top of the interview, I think it would be a helpful change, you know, because I think if you think about what an EdChoice voucher does, it really is a need-based scholarship, much like a Pell Grant, that can be used for families that can't afford private school tuition. So really the logic of these scholarships or vouchers is to help families that are in need, who can't afford the private school
but,
option.
But if your own research has showed that they may do worse in a private school, all things being equal, then is the public goal of a common of education and publicly funded, however you want it. I'm confused. But I mean, ultimate goal of what we're doing is to well educate Ohio's children, what about that?
Sure. So I think that's a great question. I'm happy to address the research that we commissioned, and as you know, proud to have been part of it. Uh-huh. It was done by a researcher at Northwestern. He took a very close look at EdChoice in its early days. So if you go back and look at the research reports, looking at kids that were in EdChoice from between 2005 and 2008, so it is a little bit a little bit dated. It did show that they lost some ground on some state tests the voucher kids were required to take. It did look at a smaller section of the EdChoice voucher students. That's not really well known if you actually read the report because of the types of methods that he was using. So there's a little bit of grain of salt there as well. One thing that is in my report is that the students in the public schools, because of the, the speaker householder mentioned this, talking about the competition, it actually showed that the EdChoice voucher increased achievement in the public school system because of some of the concerns over losing some of the dollars attached to the kids. So I think, it is a mixed story when you look at that report. Ultimately, I think the conversation we should be having is around what kind of choices parents should have for kids, for their own kids, who they're responsible for.
We will continue our conversation. Luckily, everybody's staying on. That's Aaron Churchill. He's Ohio Research Director for the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. Also with us, Scott DeMauro, President of the Ohio Education Association, and Karen Kassler, Bureau Chief of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The Ohio Speaker, House Speaker Larry Householder, late last night, announced that he has a new plan for how we fund the voucher program in Ohio, what is known as now as EdChoice, and it is a program for students who are in quote-unquote failing schools. It gives them an opportunity to go to a private school. The funding comes from the school from which they hail, the failing school district. And there is a lot of commotion right now because the number of those schools that are eligible for that is set to double or more than double starting on Saturday. Right now, state lawmakers are rushing to fix that problem, which was an unintended consequence of something related to how we categorize our schools in terms of failing or success. And meanwhile, back at the ranch, Larry Householder, the Speaker of the House, last night announced he has another plan that makes the voucher program, what we think of as EdChoice now, entirely income-based, except for the kids that are already in it.
And I wanted to add, too, I think, you talk about the school from where they hail. I mean, kids can get EdChoice vouchers who never actually go to their public school.
That's changed recently, right?
I mean, so that's kind of interesting in that, and especially for high school, that's $6,000 to go to a private high school if you potentially have never been to your public school. And now that would only be under the deal that's currently out there right now that is potentially going to change. That would only be for incoming ninth graders that would be able to get that voucher.
Is there a question out there? Maybe I'll start with you, Aaron Churchill, about kids, just because you get a voucher from the state, regardless of where it's funded, it maxes out at $6,000 for high school students. Mm-hmm. It's not like you get to go wherever you want to go. You don't get to go to St. Charles. You don't get to go to the fancy private schools. So it's not really that much choice. It doesn't necessarily put low-income people on the same level with high-wealth people, does it?
No, I totally agree with you on that. I think you were talking about earlier in the program that not every single private school participates in taking a voucher.
And I'm asking, what does that mean when we're talking about giving people choice? They don't really have a choice.
I think it certainly increases choice relative to what they would have had without a voucher. A lot of the Catholic schools participate, which have seen a lot of school closures every year and declines, and they do have capacity to take on students, and they've They have, enrolled quite a few voucher students in cities like Columbus or Toledo or Dayton. And so I think for families that would like to see that type of education with that type of teaching and instruction and sort of the religious foundation as well, I think for them, I think it's been a huge benefit in terms of the type of options that they have available. And again, I think it's important to remember that Ed Choice is voluntary and that, no one is coercing families to take
right.
an Ed Choice
But
voucher.
It's not as if you really get a full choice. You're limited.
Yeah.
And has that issue been brought up, Karen Kessler?
Well, I mean, first of all, when you look at the county, the schools that qualify, that accept Ed Choice vouchers in Franklin County, St. Charles is one of them. Also Bishop Reedy, also Bishop Watterson,
well, that's right.
Bishop Hartley.
I forgot that. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So a family could, if they are in a failing school, they could get that Ed Choice voucher and then apply it to their tuition. Obviously, $6,000 is not going to cover tuition at any of those schools I just mentioned, I don't think. So there wouldn't, and again, Ed Choice is not low income based. It's based on the school that you are actually in.
Right.
Yeah, I want to just address the whole issue of choice. You know, when I talk to parents, and I have two daughters who are products of the public school system. I don't hear parents saying what they really want is choice. What they want is quality. What they want is to ensure that the needs of their children are being met. And that means that their kids have a caring and qualified and committed educator in the classroom. That means that they have access to technology, that they have reasonable class sizes, that they have a nurse and a counselor, you know, that are meeting the needs of those students. And the problem is when a small number of students exercise a choice to go outside the public school system, that means that the 90% of our students who are attending Ohio's public schools, 90% of the children in this state attend our public schools, they have fewer resources for their needs to be met. And that's a fundamental problem with this whole construct.
It affects the economies of scale, right? I mean,
for sure.
Aaron Churchill makes a salient point that, well, you're only taking the funding for one kid out of the school. Why does that affect all the rest of them?
Well, when you look at the big picture, though, we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars that are diverted away from the public school system. And I think it's important to keep in mind that there is a consequence for those people that are choosing to stay in public schools, that they have fewer resources.
And the Ohio School Boards Association tells me over the last 2 years, Ed Choice has diverted $261 million away from public schools. So that's a lot of money.
And most of them are lower wealth districts.
That's the question. Remember that the last 2 years is, you know, the 200 and some school buildings
right.
versus 517 buildings. So it's not the big
it's
explosion.
It's before the big explosion.
Yes, yeah. right. Yeah. So, but yes, it's a lot of money. And especially for districts that are trying to plan, they're trying to do 5-year forecasts, they're trying to come up with how to budget for the number of students they're going to have. How do you do that when you don't know what to plan for? And so it makes it very that's part of the argument for moving everything over to the state's tab, because then the state will take care of it. But then once again, that's money that it's not free. It has to come from somewhere.
And I will also point out that even apart from the voucher programs and even apart from you know, the separate issue of charter schools, you can go back decades. There has always been a certain level of subsidization of private schools, you know, by the
busing,
system
that
through
kind of
transportation,
thing. Yeah.
through auxiliary services,
right.
things like that. I mean, so that's always been there. It's just that the vouchers then really make the scale of that much larger.
That's a really important point.
Yes.
That parochial schools, religious schools, they do get funding from the state for auxiliary services such as transportation and other things. They do actually get money, and I think a lot of people don't realize
that. Yeah, exactly. Right. Let's see, Chris and Galena, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Hi, great topic. My question has to do with your comments about school performance and failing schools.
Uh-huh.
It's my understanding that qualifications for teachers at private and maybe charter schools isn't the same as the qualifications for public schools, like degreed and that kind of thing.
Aaron Churchill, I want to ask about that, Chris.
And then, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, okay. We're running out of time, so I want to get to people. Aaron Churchill, what about that? What's your understanding?
Yeah, sure. My understanding for charter schools, at least, is that the qualification requirements are essentially the same for teachers
right.
and instructors. The non-public schools that participate in Ed Choice must be chartered by the state, so they operate under the same operating standards as the public school system. However, they don't receive the same type of accountability or report card system that the public schools receive.
Okay. All right. And what about teacher qualifications?
I'm not sure about the non-public teacher certification requirements. I believe that there are some under the operating standards that they have to adhere to.
Okay.
Yeah, I can tell you there's only one licensure system, and it's under the State Department of Education. And there are licensed teachers in public schools and charter schools and in private schools. But the percentage of teachers in private schools who are teaching without being fully licensed in the subject area that they're serving, mm-hmm. or the grade level that they're serving, is much higher than the percentage in public schools who mm-hmm. are teaching out of their license area.
Chris, thanks for that call. I'm going to, is it Aram?
Yes.
Hi, Aram. You're
Hi.
On the air. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
So I just have a question. Since families can get vouchers for private school or charter school options, why aren't homeschooling families allowed to get some type of compensation since they don't even use the public school system
okay.
at
let's
all?
Ask. All right. Well, let's ask.
Take vouchers.
Again, we're running out of time. I just want to make sure we get those in. Karen,
you don't get vouchers for charter schools, mm-hmm. but obviously there are charter schools that allow people to do online schooling and other options. Vouchers are only for private schools, though. But it's an interesting question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that the state of Ohio has long recognized that there is a place for people who choose to homeschool their children. When people make that choice for whatever reason, you know, part of that is accepting the fact that they're not going to have the same resources as if they chose to send their children to the public school system.
And I have just one more time for just one more question. And Kim in Upper Arlington, I don't want to rush you, but I'm rushing you.
No, very, very okay. quickly. Thank you for taking my call.
Okay.
I am the mother of four children who are long grown out of high school. I vote for every bond issue and every school levy in my district. And I don't want a dime taken away from the district that I support for someone's child to go to religious school.
But you already are.
I am, and I don't want that happening because okay. it's unconstitutional. I don't want to support religious school.
All right, so just to clarify then, Karen Kassler, does it stand in the
well,
constitutional
According to the ruling on the Cleveland voucher system, they upheld the Cleveland voucher system. The U.S. Supreme Court did, so there is a... And when you consider that, when you look at this list, again, of Ed Choice schools, most of them are religious oriented. So I see her point that it sounds unconstitutional, but the Supreme Court seems to have been siding with that
yeah.
and now seems to be going that direction with a case from Montana that they just heard last week.
But I will say on that point that the facts that were before the court when they decided the Cleveland voucher system are very different now. Now we have a statewide program that affects far more students and the scope of subsidy to religious schools is much greater. I think it's worth another look. Do I have a lot of faith in the current federal courts to do that? I don't know. But you know, as we look at this issue, we're always looking at the constitutionality of this, both at the federal level and the state level, because I think there are lots of legitimate questions there.
Aaron
yeah,
Churchill?
I'll just add that, mm-hmm. you know, I think what the court case you're talking about right now in front of the Supreme Court, you know, the plaintiffs, the people challenging the constitutionality are actually making a religious freedom argument under the First Amendment that, you know, requiring, you know, religious parents to pay tuition or discriminating against religious schools in any type of public program is sort of infringing on some of those religious freedoms that Americans ought to enjoy. So I think that is the argument on the other side in terms of religious schools and freedom of choice.
Kim in Upper Arlington, thanks for that call. We appreciate it. Obviously, this is an interesting thing to talk about again before.
And I'll just tell you what I know from right now. The committee that's going to be hearing this proposal is in recess, and the House is supposed to meet at 1 o'clock to talk about this. So, like I said earlier,
could they pull this off, Karen?
Larry Householder seems very, very confident that this is going to happen, and it, you know, keeping in line with the way that bills are passed, it has to be attached to a bill that has something to do with education. So that's what they've attached it to, a bill that has to do with career education, something along those lines. So, you know, it's, but like I said, Larry Householder said it was going to happen, and it's going to happen before Friday. So that leaves
something
today.
Something's going to happen. Karen Kassler, Bureau Chief of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, really appreciate your time today.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
Aaron Churchill, Ohio Research Director for the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, appreciate your time as well. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot.
And Scott DeMauro, President of the Ohio Education Association, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everybody else, for listening. Thanks for those great calls. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.